Our first reading comes from 1 Samuel. Listen to these words. Now, when Samuel got old, he appointed his sons to serve as Israel's judges. And the name of his oldest son was Joel, and the name of his second was Abijah. And they served as judges in Beersheba. But Samuel's sons did not follow in his footsteps. They tried to turn a profit. They accepted bribes, and they perverted justice. So all the Israelite elders got together and went to Samuel at Ramah, and they said to him, "Listen, you're old, and your sons don't follow in your footsteps. So appoint us a king to judge us, like every other nation has." It seemed very bad to Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." So he prayed to the Lord. And the Lord answered Samuel, "Comply with the people's requests, everything they ask of you, because they haven't rejected you. No, they've rejected me as king over them. They are doing to you only what they've been doing to me from the day I brought them out of Egypt to this very minute, abandoning me and worshiping other gods. So comply with their request, but give them a clear warning, telling them how the king will rule over them and operate." And Samuel explained everything the Lord had said to the people who were asking for a king. "This is how the king will rule over you and operate," Samuel said. "He will take your sons and will use them for his chariots and his cavalry and as runners for his chariot. He will use them as his commanders of troops of 1,000 and troops of 50, or to do his plowing and harvesting, or to make his weapons or parts for his chariots. He'll take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, or bakers. He'll take your best fields, your vineyards, and olive groves, and give them to his servants. He'll give 1/10 of your grain and your vineyards to his officials and servants. He will take your male and female servants, along with the best of your cattle and your donkeys, and make them do his work. He will take 1/10 of your flocks, and then you yourselves will become his slaves. And when that day comes, you'll cry out because of the king you chose for yourselves. But on that day, the Lord will not answer you." But the people refused to listen to Samuel and said, "No, there must be a king over us so we can be like all the other nations. Our king will judge us and lead us and fight our battles." And Samuel listened to everything the people said and repeated it directly to the Lord. The Lord said to Samuel, "Comply with their requests. Give them a king." Our second reading comes from Mark chapter 3. Listen to these words. Jesus entered a house, and a crowd gathered again, and it was impossible for him and his followers to even eat. And when his family heard what was happening, they came to take control of him, and they were saying, "He's out of his mind!" The legal experts came down from Jerusalem, and over they charged, "He's possessed by Beelzebul. He throws out demons with the authority of the ruler of demons." And when Jesus called them together, he spoke to them in a parable. "How can Satan throw Satan out? A kingdom involved in civil war will collapse, and a house torn apart by division will collapse. If Satan rebels against himself and is divided, then he can't endure. He's done for. No one gets into the house of a strong person and steals anything without first tying up the strong person. Only then can the house be burglarized. I assure you that human beings will be forgiven for everything, for all sins and insults of every kind. But whoever insults the Holy Spirit, they'll never be forgiven. That person is guilty of a sin with consequences that last forever." He said this because the legal experts were saying he's possessed by an evil spirit. And his mother and brothers arrived, and they stood outside and sent word to him, calling for him. And a crowd was seated around him, and those sent to him said, "Look, your mother, brothers, and sisters are outside looking for you." And he replied, "Who is my mother? Who are my brothers?" Looking around at those seated around him in a circle, he said, "Look, here are my mothers and brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother, my sister, and my mother." This is the word of the Lord.
Show of hands, who has a perfect family? One person, two people. Chuck, good, yeah, okay. 70, it was a one time. After 70 years, we'll none of us have a perfect family. But man, we sure want to look like we do. I know nothing drives crazy more than when it's the pastor's kids that are the ones right here during the BBS dance. But they're three, so we'll allow it. I know my mother had the same problems when I was a little kid of me being rambunctious. She would say, I deserve anything that the twins give me. But we want to look like everything's perfect. We want from the outside looking in, we want to look like everything is fine. Our photographs are perfectly choreographed, unless they're those candid shots, which we highly and selectively edit, which ones either get put in frames or put on Facebook. The shot of the kid having the temper tantrum and pulling out my beard does not make it to be seen by the grandparents or the friends. No, we choreograph and make everything look nice so that when people are there, you know, when people look at us, they see, man, those people have been put together. I wish our family was like that. And when they say that, we feel wonderful and well inside going, don't you wish? You want to borrow my kids for a day? But no, we're not. Nothing is ever perfect as it might seem. And even when we get caught up in thinking, man, maybe those people have it all put together, we never fully see what's going on. I mean, that's what's going on in Samuel. The Israelites are looking around at all these great kingdoms around them. There's Egypt and Assyria and Lebanon. And they're going, man, these guys got kings. Look how good they're doing. We got Samuel's pain in the neck kids running us. Let's go ask for a king. And Samuel lays out, this is what's going to happen. But they want the shiny thing that looks so good that everybody else has. We want that. We'll be victorious in battle, and people will respect us if we have a king, and it'll be wonderful. Not realizing that what they're really asking for is someone to be a tyrant. And then that leads us here to our Mark passage, our gospel lesson, where Jesus redefines a lot of stuff. I mean, here we have Jesus' family coming to get him. And he says, who are they? This is my family. Or we have Jesus, God, Lord of everything, not saying, I am like a mighty king, but instead saying, I'm the thief that sneaks in the back and knocks the guy out and ties him up. Don't think we were taught that one in Sunday school. What is God? God's a burglar. We don't teach that, but that's right here. That's what, no one comes unless they knock the guy out, tie him up, and burglarize the house. It's what Jesus says he's come to do. It's a redefining. And it's a thinking of it's a restructuring of how we look at the world. Jesus is telling us that those things that we think of as being cornerstones of all sorts of things, that God is the strong warrior king God. No, God's like a thief. Or the cornerstone of the family. Those aren't my family. You guys are. And he's mixing everything up, and it's irritating. It is. How do you think the brothers and sisters of Jesus felt standing outside? I mean, I had a professor who always said, you know, everyone would try to soften this. You know, say, oh, well, you know, he was doing a teaching. He said, well, what if you were Mary standing outside and your son said, who's my mom? Even if he went and explained it to you later, you'd still be hurt in that moment. I would imagine. I don't know. I'm not a mom. But I think it would be a little shocking. It's shocking. And we as Christians have to take these things and figure out what to do with it. And we have to think about what it means. What do we want? What do we want? Why are we here? Isn't that like the big question? Why are we here? Why are we here today? Are we here because we want people to think we have our lives put together, and people who have put together lives that come to church? That's what they do. At 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, they're in a pew and they're listening to the word. Or are we here because we want to be a part of God's kingdom? And if that's the case, what changes? What changes? Well, first off, one of the things that changes is we stop it with the perfect pictures. Just stop it. We are here because God loves us as we are, and we need to accept that fact and be who we are. Stop hiding it. Stop covering up the hurts and the pain and the imperfections that we all have, and own up to them. The second thing it means is to remember that this is a family, that we have been chosen and have chosen to be a part of. This is not the biological family lottery that you just get born into. This family is one you've been called to be a part of. God has chosen you and said, I want you. And that means living, as we've been learning in DBS, like God is alive, like God is with you, like God has a plan for you, like Jesus is alive. And I missed, guys, what was today's bottom line? Look at your necklace. What was today's bottom line? I missed it.
Live like you're part of a bigger story.
Live like, I didn't even know that. That works perfectly. Live like you're part of a bigger story, because you are. You are part of a bigger story. You're part of God's family album. How amazing is that? How amazing is that? That God looked and said, you know what my family needs? My family needs one of those. One of those, one of those, one of those, and all of y'all. God invited you. The great king of the universe said, you know what? I'm going to stop being a king for a minute. I'm going to come down there, I'm going to break in, I'm going to free them from all those strong things that are binding them down, and tie those things up, throw them in the corner, and invite these people to be part of my family. These people who have rejected me constantly, all the way back when they said they wanted a king instead of me to rule them to now, when these people are still not quite getting it, I still want them to be part of my family. And I want them to bring others to be part of my family. And I want them to realize it's okay that they're a mess, that they're struggling with illness, that they're struggling with mental problems, that they're addicted to something, that they've been beating themselves up over this, that they're feeling like they're not perfect, that they just have all these issues. I don't care. I want them. Those are my brothers and my sisters. I want them. And I want my family to let them know. To quit their squabbling. And to go out there and get them. It doesn't matter what we think we want, what we think the perfect family, the perfect church, the perfect whatever looks like. God's already told us what it is. God's invited us to be a part of it. Jesus came and lived it so we could just say, all right, that's what it looks like. And that's what we're called to be. The first church of family. That's what we're invited to be a part of. If we think that it's something else, we usually have it wrong. First and foremost, Christ called us to be family. Let's be that way. Not just to the people who are here right now, but to always realizing that they are Christ's brothers.